you will help me fill in some of those gaps. I guess just, you know, the first question would be, you know, it's not real clear to me when TULC was formed. Some people say 55, some people say 57, some people say what really wasn't active till 59.
TULC was formed in 1943. It changed names several times. We finally got the charter in 58. Uh-huh. The formulation of TULC was 1943.
Coming out of George Crockett's and Taps and those people meeting in a sort of informal black caucus?
No, prior to that, this was back when R.J. Thomas was the president of UAW. At that time when you had problems with having black staff that was assigned to service local unions, that was the beginning of then within the UAW, the TOC was formulated of fighting then to have blacks would be into a meaningful program of helping set the policy in UAW. Then behind that, in 1945, came George Crockett into the FEP department, the FEP department, under R.J. Thomas, and then when Walter Ruther took over in 46, it switched over to George left.
Okay. Mm-hmm. When did it take its present form as, you know, trade union, you know, being called Trade Union Leadership Conference? That was 58?
No, 1954, when the named Trade Union Leadership Council, and we got the charter in 58.
Who'd you get the charter from?
State.
I see. Okay, you incorporated, right?
Incorporated, state charter.
Who were the people most active in setting up TULC? Like, I assume there must have been four or five people at least that were...
Myself, Horace Sheffield, Nelson Jack Edwards, Ted Morgan, Elizabeth Jackson, Nadine Brown, John Brown.
Most of them from the UAW?
The majority of them from UAW.
What other unions?
At the formulation, all were UAW.
Okay. What was... Go ahead.
And then we branched out into other international unions, such as the Teamsters and the FFL and the ASME locals and stuff like that.
Mostly local leaders and staff, or were there just members from the...
Local leadership.
Okay. What was the first campaign thing that you did after being formulated in 1958, getting the state's charter? What was sort of the first official campaign activity of TULC? I've seen reference to an election campaign at Local 600.
We've had several.
In 1958.
Well, and the campaigns itself. I mean, the first one we actually was in as the official organization was in the Judge Jones, which is back in the early 50s. And then from that into Charles Hill, who ran for council in the city of Detroit, which again was around 52 to 53.
Mm-hmm.
Then from that into Bill Patrick, he ran for city council.
Was he a TULC member?
Yes, sir.
What local did he come out of?
He didn't come from the local. He was a TULC member from the Lawyers Guild.
I see. Mm-hmm. And he had been a labor lawyer or just general practice?
Just general practitioner.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Had he been active in union organizing, or was he?
No.
Okay.
In running for the council, we picked people who we thought was well enough known within the legalistic field.
Uh-huh.
And with degrees, and so at that time, a black had to come forth with degrees coming out of his ears.
Right.
To do anything, and then with a white, could be just a layman, and when a black had to come forth with degrees and such. So we picked Patrick at that time, who had been working closely with us as a community member. Therefore, within the UAW, within the TULC.
Okay, in reading a lot of this background stuff, I've come across a lot of mention of segregated dances and picnics and bowling leagues and so on in the UAW in the late 40s, early 1950s.
Well, not only UAW, you had the whole BPA, Bowling Proprietors Association, where blacks could not belong, and Buku Alley, where blacks couldn't bowl in because the BPA would not allow it. And this is the type of thing which TULC spoke to and fought against. In fact, I was on the original team that they used to break down discrimination within the BPA throughout the city and throughout the state.
What did BPA stand for?
Bowling Proprietors Association.
And all of the bowling alleys in Detroit, or most of them, were segregated?
Yeah. You only had about three, starting off in 35, you only had one bowling alley where blacks were going, and that was a place on the Mullen and Sheen. We called, a fellow owned it named Sam. He was Italian, so he was called Dago Sam's down on Mullet and Sheen.
Uh-huh.
That's the only place. And then after that came the Forest Club, which is on Forest and Hastings.
Did the UAW set up an integrated bowling league in 1948?
Oh, yeah, we had all kinds of bowling leagues by the time 48 came from Local 600. We had about seven leagues there, comprising of about 40 teams per each league.
This is in the 40s?
Yeah, the 40s. In 41, we had the had about six leagues at Local 600. 41. Well, we had 100,000 workers in Local 600 at that time. Now that we had six or seven leagues, and as I say, each one comprised of about 20 to 40 teams in each league.
Right. Now, I read in Wittick and Howe's book, the UAW and Walter Ruther, they said that in Chrysler and Hudson locals, that a lot of white workers would play in integrated baseball, but they wouldn't play integrated bowling because the race mixing with wives around was considered a real problem. Was
complete,
that true in Local 600?
Completely wrong. Completely wrong.
Okay.
In the baseball, the softball, or the hardball league, international leagues, and so on, they had no problem because the was never a situation of having segregated diamonds. So all we had to do was in turn get the diamond because it was all city owned.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead and play. We had no problem within the UAW of that.
Mm-hmm.
When it came to the bowling thing, you had whites who was willing to bowl with you, but the alley owners were not allowed in.
I see.
It wasn't that much membership of UAW. That's completely false.
Okay. When was that broken down? At what point were the majority of bowling alleys starting to integrate?
1952 to 1955.
Okay. When you formed, or when you came, gained visibility as TULC in 1958, what kind of opposition did you face in the labor movement? What was the kind of thing that opponents of TULC would say?
That the blacks are one grand river, wanted to run things, so as a result of that, it was ridiculed and tabooed, and they formulated other organization to act as a daggone buffer against TLC. I mean, some of those within the UAW who was bigoted inclined, those who were on the executive board, but we never did have that problem out of President Ruther at the time, nor Douglas Frazier, Woodcock, the ones who was in capacity leadership at that time, but those down to lesser levels down, certainly they had eyes against because they contended it was the idea of a union within a union.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, we didn't have to say because you had international unions at that time within the labor movement that had color bars in the Constitution where blacks couldn't belong, not within the UAW.
Right.
But within the UAW, hell, you had, might as well had it because you all jobs over and above the menial or the janitor, so like that, was completely taboo to blacks.
Right.
And the only place you had where blacks could integrate into higher paying jobs was in the Ford setup out around the Rouge plant.
Right.
And, Chrysler came second, and General Motors the last one to put blacks on jobs all above just sweepers and so forth.
Right. I read that Woodcock and Brendan Sexton and B.J. Wittick, people like that, were members of TULC. Is that true?
Definitely.
Woodcock from the beginning?
Woodcock, right from, well, we started off first, we went the first couple of years with it as an all-black organization because we felt first we had to get out of a niche together where we were going, what we were trying to do.
Uh-huh.
And after we got it together, then within the circle then came B.J. Wittick and Brendan Sexton and Woodcock, Doug Frazier, Bard and Young, and so forth. Those were all members right down the back.
Okay. In reading about the Kavanaugh campaign, which was obviously a point where the TLC really challenged the UAW's political priorities, the UAW, well, you know the whole story, obviously. I've read a lot about the activity TULC and then the block clubs that were real active in the campaign. Was there any merging of the two? Was TULC involved in the block clubs at all?
TULC is the one who formulated the coalition that brought forth Kavanaugh.
Uh-huh.
Kavanaugh was in the old 15th congressional district then. And we, along with the leadership in that, you had myself, Sheffield, and Dick Austin, who is now the Secretary of State. The members there, and we formulated the nucleus to put together the coalition with the community, the archdiocese, and the different ethnic groups, the Italians, the Poles, and Irish, the Kavanaugh bit, and we put together a team that then that challenged the UAW. Now, why was it challenging the UAW? Because the UAW, without even stopping and checking to see what's what, or about waiting until the deadline was up for people filing. They came forth and already endorsed Mariani. And Mariani at that time, and he wasn't wrong, but that went into a thing where it was challenging the whole black community of the stop and frisk and seize it, search and search and seizure, And any black standing around anywhere, morning, noon, or night, the police up for any daggone car, searching, humiliating, every daggone thing else. We went down and talked to Mary Ann at the time, who was the mayor, who was elected by black support and labor support. Couldn't get any understanding from him. So then we went into labor to try to get them, those who was the leadership within labor, to talk to him. And that fell on deaf ears. We said, one thing, the best we can do is get somebody in that we can talk to. And so we formulated the coalition then that went out as anti-Mary Ann Inn. Since the labor movement had endorsed him, it became then a confrontation between the TLC and our coalition against the labor movement.
Was the TLC then setting up the coalition of block clubs, or did it actually help organize block clubs?
We were used as a formulator of block clubs and other organizations within the community.
What was the Cotillion Club?
Completely out of it altogether at the time. The Cotillion Club was a bourgeoisie organization at that time and completely aloof from the problems of the working class people.
I was wondering, because it's listed, you know, among the groups that was involved in the Kavanaugh campaign. Is that a misstatement? I mean, there's
almost such a misstatement.
Okay. There's a couple of histories that do that, and it seems sort of odd.
It's completely wrong.
Because it's mostly an organization for bringing out young girls, right, isn't it?
It's now an organization for leadership within the community, but at that time, it was strictly one where the hyper lawyer, the doctors, the lawyers, and so forth, those with degrees, they had their own society among them, and that was what it was.
Okay. TLC gave, obviously, substantial support to the Southern struggle for civil rights. In fact, I wanted to ask you about a picture we got here. This is a... certainly one you've seen before.
That's me there from the
right, but I was wondering
food and stuff up.
Who the other folks are in that picture, starting up here? That sort of looks like Horace, but I'm not.
No, it's not Horace.
I don't think it is.
It's not Horace.
And is this Ann Young?
Ann Jones. There's Ann Jones there. Jones. Frank Holly here, who is it? Or is Ann Jones there? Ann Jones there.
Okay.
Adam White, Louis Holmes. These two are from the Labor's local. I was the president, and that was the finance secretary of the Labor's local. Ann Jones there.
And Adam White is this guy here?
Adam White is here.
Okay. And
president of that's Louis Holmes.
Louis Holmes. They're both from the Labor's?
It was both from the Labor's local at the time. Yes, one was president, and the other one was the Labor's local 334.
Okay.
President, finance secretary. That was Frank Holly here.
Frank Holly here.
Who was the finance secretary of the TLC.
Okay. Where was he from?
He was from local 410 UAW.
Okay. And who are those women there? So we have Ann Jones on the right. And
it's Ann Jones here.
Mm-hmm. She was head of the educational stuff, wasn't she?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then these two?
It's foggy, we can't see who they know it.
Okay. Do you recognize this guy?
That's John Kanye Sr.
Alright.
And where the hell is he? I think that was a truck driver. Truck driver was going to ride the truck. With the Teamsters.
Okay.
We got the truck driver, the Teamsters to give us the truck to carry the food down to Mississippi.
Okay. How often did you send those trucks?
Every time we get a load with them. It's almost about every 60 days.
Every
60 days? About every 60 days. And we'd have the distribution of different places of where we collected, for people making contributions. And every time we get a truckload, we'd call right down to Teamsters.
Okay.
And they would in turn give us a truck to carry down completely free. Wouldn't have to pay for the gas or oil or nothing like that, because there was an end to it. But that was prior to the death of Viola Luzio. Her along with her husband, along with Hoffman, so was working with us on that part. Although the Teamster wasn't known as a liberal organization, but it was in places like that where they could help financially and so on like that they would in turn pull right in and take their part.
Okay. What about up here? Were there boycotts that TLC organized up here, or, to desegregate lunch counters or stores or anything like that?
We had our problems here. Search through, and let's say that the idea of desegregating them was done mostly by a guy named Caruso, a little short guy, about 5'3", and you just saw him with a ladder around preaching against weird places right in the black community. The Borsky's delicatessen right on Farnsworth and Hastings, where 98% of the people within a 20-block radius anywhere there was all black. And a black could sit down and place and eat a hot dog. You had the green fields over on Woodward, which was three blocks away from predominantly black areas, and a black couldn't go in there and eat. Then you had the Tasty Barbecue, which is on Mack and Woodward, same thing. Then you had the Checker Barbecue, right in the heart of a black neighborhood on Brush and Erskine. Everything around was black. Blacks can sit down there and eat, you mean?
How were those desegregated, finally?
By brute force.
People just went in and sat down?
Just muscle and said, not sit down. And so what you go do is go tear the joint down, you mean?
Okay.
At that time, the majority of the things like that was owned, operated as an undercover thing by the then known as the Purple Gangsters and so forth, you mean? Which was your Jewish mafioso at the time. But finally, the blacks took it in their hands. We ain't going no further that way.
When was that? Were these episodes?
42 to 46.
Okay. Were those organized sort of informally, or were those organized by the
union? By people in the writing community.
Okay, so it was a neighborhood thing mostly.
Yep.
Was the TULC actively involved in with the Detroit Council for Human Rights in organizing the 63 March, or was that something that started with Reverend Franklin and then...
The TULC formulated the whole thing. After that, you had others who moved in as a taker over, here I am, and this, that, and so forth. And we wasn't hogging for credit. All we were doing was getting people together in.
Mm-hmm.
You had Del Rio, who claimed the credit for it, but he was one of those involved. But you had the couple organizations, TLC, Target, Freedom, and two or three others, who would get together and formulate it, and did the red work of getting the people together, I mean. And you had others who was in the capacity of the doctors and lawyers and so forth, and their name and so forth, to put together money. The time came through and put together the finances and such.
What about Reverend Franklin? Where was his involvement? Where would he fall?
Reverend Franklin was a good friend of Martin Luther King and family and such, and his daughter then, Aretha Franklin, and he was out and all throughout the country and so forth.
Was he actively involved with the TLC at the beginning, or did he?
No, he was involved with the ministerial alliance they had working in. And usually we didn't turn swing in at the end together, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it's all of the leg, Jimmy Higgins' work was done by the TLC.
For the 63 March.
Not only 63 March, all the other marches also. Right?
Okay. What was Coleman Young's involvement in TLC? I came across, leaflets that would announce that he was going to come and talk to meetings usually here about Vietnam or housing and so on. But I never saw him listed as an officer or anything.
I remember him, not an officer. But Coleman Young was out in the front fighting in the 30s when he had the Negro Labor Council. One that they came through and charged of being subversive. But Coleman was never an officer in the TLC, but he was a member and fought right along with us with the same benefits, the same rights we were. In fact, it was TLC that helped get the pink taint off of Coleman in the labor movement. They had blackballed Coleman as being subversive and so forth. It was through the fighting of the TLC that we made them. The leadership at that time was Al Barber and Mike Novak and John Williams was the leadership within the Wayne County CAP, which is the political action part of the time. And they finally made them take the daggone taint off of him or the bar from him where he could run and be endorsed.
Okay. I have a few more questions. These start to become a little more looking at the internal sort of conflicts in TULC. I wasn't able to really sort out the conflict between TULC and the Metro Detroit Labor Community Association. What exactly was that?
MDELCA was an organization which was formulated within the union to try to help break the TULC. At that time, we just got through with an election between John Conyers and Austin, who ran for the congressman of the first district,
right.
Which John Conyers is chairman now. And within the TLC was a split down, and a part went for Austin, part went for John Conyers. And as a result of that, that grew the split, which was financed by the labor movement. Mine saying that UAW financed the thing for the split. Because at that time, they felt the TLC had got too daggone big, was taking too much control. By that time, he was out throughout the whole UAW, throughout the country.
Uh-huh.
And as a result of that, they was fearful of not Walter Lutheran Rest and Duke, because Walter was a part of and agreed with us 100% that you should have an organization when you're looking after the blacks. But those in that time didn't have a black on the executive board. Then we was able to hue and cry every convention on give us a black on the executive board. And the whites was on there, the feeling if you had a black on, you're going to take one of their places, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, there was always a resentment built in fight against.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How was that resolved, the split?
You had a large number of us who was a member of the Walter Luther caucus. In fact, I was a secretary for the caucus on the west side. And we formulated and got in the caucus and said, in 1959, in the 59 convention, we had the civil rights question on where we wanted to bring it before the convention. We had already argued it in caucus. Then it came out of the convention where we had the civil rights move resolution up. We went on the floor there so we get an official position. And when they refused to put on the floor for a debate, we led the black delegates out of the convention in Atlantic City. And next time around, then Luther committed himself down that he would have a black on his slate running and actively supported to be on the board. Mm-hmm. As a result of that, we came up with the spot that Nelson Jack Edwards was chosen by the white at that time to be the candidate. Sheffield was the candidate from the blacks. And they would not buy Sheffield, saying that he was controversial and blah, blah, blah. Otherwise, that thing was, if you rock the boat, you can't ride, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they brought forth several candidates, and we in turn rejected them. So when finally they came forth with Jack Edwards, who was a member of TLC and a guy who worked closely with us, we in turn went along with it. As a result, that was your first black on the board. Second black on the board came in 1968 when Joe McCusker died. And at that time, Marcellus Ivory was picked,
right,
who was a member of TLC and in a strained ranch. And he was chosen then as the second black, which was the regional director, Region 1A, which I am not the director of.
Right. Didn't Nelson Jack Edwards, though, wasn't he involved in the formation of the Metro Detroit Labor Community Association?
I said that the UAW.
But he started out as a TULC guy, didn't he?
TLC guy all the way through. But they formally put together the MDELCA, which was to act as a buffer against the TULC.
Okay. How was that MDELCA-TULC split resolved? I mean, didn't they merge later?
They merged.
And that was, how was that set up? I mean, was that...
We finally got tired of having white folks make fools out of us.
So you finally merged it to reunify
the... One, the TULC-MDELCA.
Is it now TLC alone, or is it TLC MDELCA?
It's now the TLC Nelson Jack Edwards Education Center.
Okay.
We dropped MDELCA all together and just put down TLC Nelson Jack Edwards.
Okay.
And Jack got killed. We in turn formally then changed the whole structure over to, in his memory, making the Nelson Jack Edwards Education Center TLC.
Is that what this building is now called?
Yeah.
It's no longer Freedom House?
TLC MDELCA. Nelson Jack Edwards Educational Center TLC.
Okay. What was the membership peak of TULC?
13,600.
And 13,600, when was that?
1960 and 61.
And what is it now?
Oh, we fluctuate between 4,000 and 6,000.
Okay. Is the principal activity electoral or educational right now, I mean?
Same thing, education.
Principally education?
Yeah.
Okay.
We've had several training programs that kept us in the educational field of the community people, black and white alike. Before the TAP programs came in, we was in turn doing for free, and all the resorts from the TLC went to put these programs together. It was completely free to the people within the community neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Why did membership decline? If the peak of TULC, well, what year would you say the TULC peak was in terms of influence and membership and so on?
Up to 64, 65.
And why did it decline after that?
The split between the TLC and what later became known as MDELCA.
Uh-huh.
And out of that, some 15 other splinter groups started. So instead of having one organization with the total membership, you got about 25 organizations now with a splinter here, splinter there, and so forth. And mm-hmm. As a result, you haven't got one third the clout that you had then. Your politicians play one group against the other one, and as a result, you got nothing going on.
What about George Crockett? Was he in TULC later on?
George Crocker was never an actual member of TLC, but he was one of those in capacity of leadership. He had worked with us all the way through. George was an attorney as such out, and he would in turn handle the legal end and give us opinions and so forth on how and where to go.
Okay. Those are all the questions I had. Is there anything that I should be especially aware of as I keep...
Not if you read the archives or read the book by Jack Whittick, Labor Today.
Uh-huh.
It told pretty much of the struggles we had within the labor movement. And then Labor Today tells about the trip we took down to Miami Beach when we went down to answer George Meany when he asked Phil Randolph who nailed that.
Right.
Point you spokesman for all blacks, and we went down and answered his ass and so forth. But
right.
Read about the struggles in 600 of the all-white slates ran and so like that. And
when was that?
You didn't read the book then.
No, I didn't.
You didn't read the book.
I didn't read Labor Today. I read B.J. Whittick's book.
That's B.J. Whittick's book, Labor Today.
But I read the other one, A Detroit City of Class and Race Violence.
Well, get the one, Labor Today by B.J. Whittick. That was his first book out.
Okay.
In 61, 62, that told about the struggles in 600. It was in 59 when the all-white slate was ran.
And TULC ran a slate against it?
The members of 600 who belonged to TULC
uh-huh.
ran a slate against it. I was myself and Sheffield and others were in leadership, elected leadership in 600. So they wanted to put it down and named it as if the TULC was running the slate. It wasn't. It was members of local 600. But we happen to be members of the TLC.
I see. Okay. Well, I'll get Whittick's book.